Well, there's, I don't know if you heard about this case. There was a physician, research scientist at Brown University who published a paper, very serious data, scientific data. I think her name is Lisa Limple or Lipple. I can't remember her name. It was published, I think, in Plus One, you know, very serious scientific journal, where she looked at the social contagion, you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. You know, of sort of transgenderism, how if, you know, there definitely seems to be, well, literally that, a social contagion effect. Mm-hmm. Now, that paper was published. Brown had advertised it. It was published in a top peer-reviewed journal. Well, the trans activists came after that paper, and Brown decided to at least pull it off of its sort of promotional platform. Yeah. I reached out actually to I think her name is Lisa, to get her on the show. But as you might imagine, she was a bit tepid.
Yeah, she's probably shell-shocked.
She's shell-shocked. And so I'm not sure if she'll come. But again, here's a serious person who probably is liberal. She's, mm-hmm. She's a physician who deals with these issues, who was simply talking about the fact that there's definitely a social contagion effect that is taking place. She's a Nazi.
Yeah, there's people are just really, really crazy when it comes to gender. That yeah. seems to be the battleground between logic and science. It rests right. in gender. And I had this conversation with a friend of mine about the gender pay gap. And he was arguing it as if it was a thing where there was a man and a woman working right next to each other, doing the same job, and the woman was making 78 cents, the man right. was making a dollar. And he's a smart guy. And I had to explain to him. I said, this is not the case. I go, they're doing different jobs.
Exactly.
They're working different hours. I go, you're spitting out propaganda as if it's true. And he was reluctant to believe me.
Yeah.
He was like, are you serious? He literally said this. He goes, I'm going to be very upset if I find out that you're lying to me. I go, but I'm lying to you. I go, this is adorable. You're going to be, you don't even know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right.
And you're going to be upset if you find out that I'm lying. I'm going to be upset if you don't fucking apologize to me when I show you this.
So did he?
No, he did not. I sent him the information. I sent him many articles on it. And I sent him many critiques of the way even the president of the United States was discussing this, because they're doing it in a very politically correct way that is actually disingenuous. I showed him the actual raw data that shows that men work an average of, I forget what the percentage is, more hours, that they're more likely to die on the job, they pick more risky jobs. It's a totally different thing. This is not discounting actual sexual discrimination at
sure.
work, which I'm sure exists. But this is not, when you're looking at the raw data, which is what they're trying to say, the 78 cents to a dollar, they're saying this is just systemic sexism across the board. There's no other explanation for it. So I showed him, no, there is other explanations for him. It's different jobs. It's working different hours. There's probably a bunch of factors. Testosterone making you more aggressive, making you more risk-taking. There's all sorts of different factors. His response was, sometimes the perception of something is as important as the facts.
Right.
I'm like, you motherfucker, I'm going to come to your house and smack you in the face in front of your woman.
You know, but it's interesting that you say this, because what you were trying to do there is use information,
yes.
hopefully a tsunami of information, to get him to move away from his anchored position, which is something that I discuss in great detail in my book. And I think I've come to a similar realization to you, regrettably, in that is that oftentimes all the information in the world is not going to help.
Yeah, he didn't want to lose. Yeah.
And it really is, you're putting your hands in your, la, 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 I don't want
to
hear
it.
He
was trying to find a way to say, by him saying that perception is sometimes more important than the actual facts.
Right.
He was trying to say that women are discriminated against because these facts are paraded around in a way that make women feel bad.
Right.
And because women feel bad that they're making 78 cents to the man's dollar, that is just as important as the actual reality of how much they make. I'm like, God damn it. This is, you just spun a web. You spun a bullshit web, and your legs are all trapped up in it. You can't go anywhere now.
Well, it speaks to another thing that I discuss in the book. So are you familiar with Popper's falsification principle?
No.
So Karl Popper was a philosopher of science. As a general rule, I hate to read most philosophers because they engage in a lot of highfalutin bullshit that really doesn't get us anywhere. But philosophers of science actually are quite helpful in that they really help us understand the epistemology of how to learn about knowledge, create knowledge, test knowledge. And so Karl Popper argued that if you really want to test a theory, you have to be able to falsify the theory. That which cannot be falsified cannot be considered a scientific theory, right? If the observation is this way, it supports the theory. If the observation is this way, it falsifies the theory. So for example, fate is not a scientific theory, right? Because if I step out of my house today and the truck hits me, it was my fate. If I step out of my house and the truck doesn't hit me, it was my fate. So there are no conditions of the world where whatever is instantiated is not my fate. Therefore, fatalism is not part of, you know, the epistemology of science, right? Well, so to speak to that point that we were talking about earlier, how once someone is anchored in a position, you can't get them away from it. So I talk, and I have a section in my book that is currently titled All Roads Lead to Bigotry, right? So let me give you a few examples of these. If you say that you don't want to have sex with overweight women, grossly overweight women, 500-pound women, then the argument is you're a fattist, right? You are judging us based on the folds of our skin and you're dehumanizing us. If you are someone who is specifically looking to have sex with someone who is overweight, you are fetishizing our skin folds. So if I love having sex with a fat woman, I'm a bad person. If I don't want to have sex with a fat woman, I'm a bad person. And I demonstrate through many of these examples how all roads lead to victimhood, right? I gave the example, I think the last time I was on the show, of a woman who had done a study demonstrating that Israeli soldiers had never raped a Palestinian woman. Do you remember that case? Mm-hmm. Now, she had done the study hoping to show that there was rampant rape of Palestinian women. She couldn't uncover a single documented case of a Palestinian woman being raped by IDF soldiers, Israeli Defense Forces soldiers. What did she conclude from that? Well, the IDF soldiers are so racist that they dehumanize these women so much that they're not even worthy of being raped. So if you rape the Palestinian women, you're an evil Jew. If you don't rape any of the Palestinian women, you're an evil Jew. And so through all of these examples, I demonstrate that all states of the world lead to you being a bigot. And that, if you like, fails Popper's falsification principle.
Because except the state of not choosing at all.
Meaning
if you don't choose between a fat woman, or if you don't love a fat woman, or you don't not want to have sex with a fat woman, you just have sex with anyone who wants to have sex with you. Right? Like, that's the equal outcome. I mean, essentially, right, that's what they're looking for.
Right.
Because if you don't choose. But what's really interesting about people is if someone doesn't have your principles ideologically, you're allowed to shit on them and body shame them. Like, how many people called Trump disgusting and made fun of his little hands? And right, how many liberals, left-wing people, talking about how much he must obviously have a little dick?
Right.
Right? It's like,
yeah,
it's horseshit.
Yeah, I mean, hypocrisy is across both aisles, right?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I don't know if you want to get into this at all, but what did you think? I know it's a bit old news now, but what did you think of some of our common friends' response to the Brett Kavanaugh situation?
Our common friends' responses?
Some of our common friends, I thought, did not respond well. They did not follow a deontological ethos, as far as I'm concerned.
Like, in what?
So for example, the presumption of innocence, mm-hmm, should be something that is so profoundly a non-starter in terms of ever violating that tenet.
Okay.
That to the extent that we didn't come infinitely close to establishing that he was guilty of anything, it's a non-starter that you don't, there is no repercussions that should befall him. And yet many folks that both of us know were not of that opinion. So for example, one of our friends thought that, well, this wasn't a criminal case. This was a job interview. And so we don't need to reach the same exacting level of evidence to determine for him to be potentially guilty. I thought that was grotesque.
Who said that?
His name rhymes with Sham Paris.
Well, I think people were rightly concerned about Kavanaugh's ideology in terms of his record on privacy. His promotion of the Patriot Act. There was a bunch of issues that people had real concern. Mm. Those seemed to go away while this was all going on, which, right, is really confusing to me. Like, there's real reasons to be concerned about this guy.
Jordan said, put out a tweet, and I might have been the first one to critique him for it, where he said, if Kavanaugh is confirmed, he should step down. I thought that that was insane.
Why did he say that? What was his reasoning?
Subsequently he said, oh, it was a thought experiment. No, there's no thought experiment, right? I mean, any sane person would think that someone coming out 36 years after the fact, 5 minutes before there's going to be the vote, saying, well, somewhere, somehow, someplace, not sure, he may have been the one, is not going to pass.
I don't think she was saying he may have been the one. She was saying he was the one, yeah. And she was saying that he covered her mouth,
yeah,
and that he was trying to get her pants off, but she was wearing a one-piece swimsuit.
Right.
And yeah, I read into it. I don't know what happened. That's the real problem. No one knows what happened, right, other than her and him, and both of them are dealing with 36-year-old memories.
But I'm saying right here, I've already said this on my show, I remember, I think it was in 1983, I was at some summer camp, and Hillary Clinton took me to the side and had my way. I'm pretty sure it was 1983, maybe 1984.
She had her way with you?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah, pretty sure it was Hillary.
Pretty sure, kind of sure?
I'm kind of confident it was her.
Kind of?
Yeah. look, Elizabeth Loftus, who is someone that I know well, who's a professor at UC Irvine, who is the preeminent researcher on memory and eyewitness testimony, is someone who has demonstrated through many, many decades of research that our memory is unbelievably inaccurate.
Unbelievably.
Yeah. Our ability to remember, sort of to identify someone in eye testimony 4 weeks ago, is unbelievably suspect, let alone 36 years ago.
That's true.
So where was the science?
Let me pause right there. Because there are traumatic events that you can remember very well, particularly if someone tries to assault you or if something happens to you that gets seared into your brain. That's a fact. I mean, I remember being beat up when I was 7.
Right.
I remember being humiliated. My stepdad, it wasn't even really beat up. Like a kid hit me like once or twice or something like that, but I didn't do anything about it. I froze. And I remember my stepdad came and rescued me. I remember that. I don't remember all the details, but I do remember that I felt humiliated and that I lost. And I do remember that my stepdad had to rescue me. I remember that.
Right.
Like, you can remember stuff from 36 years ago. It is possible. But the problem with this story is that they were drinking. They were underage. They were really young. Okay, so you're dealing with all these factors. There was some sort of interaction physically. You know, was she somewhat willing? Was she somewhat into him? Was she completely resistant to it? I don't know. She doesn't know. He doesn't know. But there's no demonstrated pattern of him doing awful things. And then on top of that, there was a couple, at least two people, that had completely fraudulent claims,
right,
that came out, and they were ideologically opposed to him, so they had concocted these stories that turned out to fall apart. Here's my feeling on that. If someone does that intentionally, they should receive the same kind of punishment.
I could not agree with you
that
more.
That someone would get,
yes,
if they were convicted of those acts.
I've written an article on this, actually.
It's true. If you falsely accuse someone of rape, intentionally falsely accuse someone of rape, you are literally subjecting them to the punishment of rape. What if the prosecution goes through? What if that person winds up getting incarcerated, locked in a cage, separated from their family, taking away their ability to earn a living? You should be treated the same way you were trying to get them to be treated. I think it is almost an equal act to rape itself.
You know, I hope it doesn't
have physical violence.
I'm going to go further than you. Maybe it's going to get me into trouble. I almost would argue that it is more diabolical, because the rapist does a horrific act on you once. Every single morning that you wake up as a false accuser, knowing that you have put this person in prison, and you go about your day, you're engaging in this form of rape, if you like. So
I would disagree with that, because I think if you rape someone, that person who got raped has to deal with that, the real pain of being physically violated
over and
over again.
And the guy who's in prison for 25 years and getting raped by 7 guys.
Guy's got to learn how to fight.
Come on, learn how to keep
your butt cheeks closed and keep moving. No.
By the way,
both of them are awful. I think the rapist is far more awful, because he's physically doing something.
I had a guy on my show. Maybe I've had not as many people as you have, but I've had quite a few amazing people on my show. One of the most poignant ones was a gentleman that I invited, and I was lucky that he accepted my invitation. I think his name is David McCallum. So maybe last January, he had been released from, I think, almost 3 decades in prison for a murder that came out that wasn't him who did it.
Oof.
Now, the reason why I invited him, more than just because it's an incredible story, is that I had seen his response to the unimaginable injustice that he had gone through. I think he went in when he was 17, and now he was in his late 40s. And he had such grace, such lack of anger. I mean, it literally was, he was Buddha. And so I thought, how powerful it would be to have this person come on my show, if only to tap into this unbelievable ability. I mean, and I told him, I think, on the show that if it were me, I would be so eaten up by anger, by a sense of revenge. I want to burn the whole planet down. Anyways, this is a great guy. You should definitely check him out. He's written a book about it. It's really an amazing story.
Yeah, false accusations are awful, and people who lie to try to punish someone who didn't do anything, that's an awful crime.
Yeah.
And I think it should be equal in punishment to the crime that you are falsely accusing someone of doing. I really do. I think that's the only way to stop it. The real problem is with false rape accusations is that there's very little punishment at all that happens to the women for the most part, or the men who accuse men of falsely raping them. There's very, very little happens.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I don't understand. I don't understand why people don't think about it as the horrific thing that it actually is. I think it's partly because people are afraid of doubting someone who has been raped. If you, one of the more horrific things you could do is, like, imagine if you had been raped and then you told your story and I came along and I have no knowledge of the actual event, and I come along and I go, psst, Gad's a liar. This is bullshit. It never happened. Right. Nothing happened to him. He's just a baby. He just wants attention. So he's running around here. He was wearing a short skirt and he went out that night, and you know, and that is something that does happen. So I think that is so disgusting. Someone who doubts someone who has actually been a victim, that people are scared of that. And then also there's the kid gloves approach. We don't treat women accusing men of things the same way we accuse women, men accusing women of things. Men accusing women of things, where if a man accuses a woman of violence, we're like, psh, you okay, dude?
Right.
You're going to be fine? If a woman beats up her husband, which does happen. I mean, I know a guy, his girlfriend used to punch the shit out of him. And I was like, bro, you got to get out. Like, you're literally being abused. You're being domestically abused and no one's even going to care.
Right.
Do you understand? Like, you got to get out of this relationship, because look, if you were hitting her, if a man is hitting a woman, man, I'm lock that motherfucker up. That's how I feel. And I'm sure that's how you feel too. That guy's a piece of shit.
Of course.
But if a woman hits a man, I'm like, keep your hands up, man. Don't let her hit you. It's like, but this is from me, a man whose friend was murdered by his wife. One of my good friends, Phil Hartman,
was
murdered by his wife. So, and this is a woman who was always insulting him, always like publicly humiliating him.
You saw this during that
time? I saw her publicly humiliate and insult him. I saw it many times. She's a very angry person. She had a cocaine problem. She was also on Zoloft. They won some sort of a settlement with Zoloft, the family did, because she was doing cocaine and Zoloft at the same time. And it's known to have a psychotic reaction. But she shot him in his fucking sleep, man. Yeah. I mean, women do commit violence. It's not as common, but it's still gross. It's still an egregious crime. But good luck trying to go to get someone locked up for it.
Wow.
Good luck getting anybody to be sympathetic, even me.
Did you ever? I mean, not that
I met your wife. She's a lovely woman. If she kicked your ass, I'd probably be on her side.
You're probably wondering how.